Hello and welcome to Stories of Success, your listening experience for self-development. It is here where I, Volker Baluder, as your host, regularly interview interim and fractional CXOs to understand and share more about the emerging group of people that serve companies as interims in leadership positions. Join me here on Season 5 to learn more about this space and how you can become a successful interim and fractional leader. If you want to find out more about myself or what Baluder Partners can do for you in the area of sales consultancy, please visit www.baluderpartners.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please share and give me a 5-star rating. And now, without further ado, let's welcome my guest and please enjoy the show. Today, I welcome Peter Weichsel to my podcast. So Peter is German. The name might give it away. So if I say a fellow German, so he's based in Germany as well. And we met originally when he dealt with various digital marketing startups when he was at Deutsche Post many, many years ago. I do believe we met in a taxi, but I don't know. That might be just my memory after a few drinks somewhere, but I don't know. Doesn't matter. It's media, right? So we had a good time. Most recently, we actually got back in touch through my newsletter and we discussed joint business development, but also had a chat about my podcast, as Peter has quite some experience as interim and fractional C-level or in C-level roles. I'm in particular interested actually to share his experience with startups, large corporations and consulting roles. And before we went live, we already started talking about what is a consultant, what is an interim. So I'm sure that's a good way to start. So Peter assumes an interim management role within the Vodafone Group. But if I say, let's hear the story from himself. So first of all, Peter, welcome to my podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thanks for the time to talk. And let's share a couple of stories, right?
Yeah, exactly. So let's start with the taxi. No, let's start with with maybe an intro from your end. What you've been doing? You know, obviously, as I said, we met when you were at Deutsche Post. You know, at Vodafone. What's your background? Maybe let's start there.
Yes, I think it's good to understand. It's going to be part of also the topics we want to share. I've worked as a senior executive, and you named it already, at Deutsche Post, and people who looked on my LinkedIn profile can easily find out the timing. I've been a consultant for many, many years in large top management consultancy companies, but I also set up startups and worked in startups. I worked as an investor managing startups. And so basically, I switched roles many times in my life, and people always used to say that Peter is always doing the same stuff, but the only thing he's changing is his operating model. So sometimes he's a consultant, sometimes he's an interim manager, sometimes a manager, sometimes he's an investor. There is some truth in it, of course, switching those roles. There is a couple of fickle details around that, which we may want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's a great... See, every time I speak to a fellow German, I start thinking about German terms, and I was like, "Is this a Steilvorlage?" And I don't know what that means in English. it's a great way to get the ball kicking, right? To get the game kicked off. I think that's
Steilvorlage is from soccer, and if the ball comes very high and wide, yeah, and somebody is at the right place and can pick up the ball and score, then basically you got the Steilvorlage.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know how you translate it anyway. So let's start there. Because we already touched on that before we went live, right? What is a consultant? What is interim? What's your view of the world?
Let's start with an anecdote which gave me great learning when I was basically about a month at Deutsche Post, and I was in charge of managing, let's say, a portfolio of startups, a kind of an incubator. And this was those digital startups, Volker. We talked about that at that time. And I went to my boss. He was one of the board members of Deutsche Post. And we had a problem at the startup. And I came basically, haven't been a consultant before. I came with a PowerPoint slide and with the options. And saying, we've got a problem. These are the options. Yeah. And he looked at me and said, yeah, Peter, and so what? And I said, yeah, what? So what? Don't you want to decide? He said, no, you decide. I said, okay. Yeah, because you are the manager now. You're not anymore a consultant. There's nobody else who knows better. And honestly, the only thing I do, I pay you for success, make those portfolios successful. Yeah, make sure our investment is well suited. How you do it, you're the manager. I learned a great deal with this story, and handed it over later on. And it clearly told me that if you're switching from a consultant to a manager, you make clear you're actually switching like from a coach to somebody who does the real sports. You can't basically tell somebody how to jump. You're going to jump yourself.
Yeah.
And of course, if you go back from management into consulting, the same holds true. You may just imagine if you basically have been a manager, you're standing your ground, and then you're a consultant again. And I switched from management to consulting about 3 years ago. You're going to be careful that you don't actually mess with management. Yeah. You're a coach.
Yeah.
You tell how to jump. You don't jump yourself. And if you try to jump, you may even break your leg.
Okay. How did you end up in that position? Did you start in consultancy, or did you start as interim, or did you get to a point in your career where you decided, I wanted to maybe, if I say, stop being in a corporate world and just want to do interim? Or was it more, if I say, career progression?
I think it was more opportunity driven. To be fair, I founded my first startup during university times, and I felt I wasn't reasonably kind of educated for actually managing a company. I was probably a pretty bad manager. Decided to actually learn it the real way and joined the company. At that point, it was a mobile operator, and this is quite some time ago. We have to look at each other. This was 1993, yeah. At that time, mobile operators, this was hot shit. This was like Google today, a startup in Silicon Valley. Mobile operators were the coolest thing on earth. So basically worked for a mobile operator for 5 years, first in technology roles and later on in product management roles. And then I decided to switch, and just by chance, I got an offer from a consultancy, and it was like new economy hype. Everything was possible. I said, why not? So I basically went from a manager to consultancy, even without thinking about it. There wasn't a real intent behind it. The first thing I figured out that I probably wasn't a good manager beforehand, but I definitely wasn't a good consultant when I joined consulting. But I had an exceptionally mentor. Yeah, it was the founder of that small consultancy. This was at that time kind of a small tech consultancy. And I learned a great deal about consulting. I learned it from a former McKinsey partner.
Yeah.
I still owe him a lot for that. And so I basically learned consulting from scratch and figured out that consulting actually quite works well for me. Did it for a couple of years, and then took another chance to set up again a startup. But consulting, of course, opened the door that you're typically in, let's just say, in difficult situations where a client searches for help and the client hires a consultant, and then over time figures out what they actually need is not a consultant, what they need is a manager. And we talked about the difference. So the consultant says, I don't have anybody you can coach. I don't have anybody who does the job. I actually need somebody to do the job. And given that I had started in management, I had frequent situations in my career where clients actually had hired a consultant, ended up asking for a manager. I switched roles, changed hats, actually worked as a manager.
Which role do you prefer?
That's hard to say.
You don't have to answer this, of course.
They both have their merits, and I'm a very positive guy. I said, let's look on the merits of both. The merit of being a manager, is actually you're looking on the whole thing. Yeah, you own a thing. Typically, if the managerial role is well suited, you own the whole thing and the result. So, a consultant typically, and if a consultant is well contracted, they get a specific mandate. I always compare it with you calling for somebody with a special machinery, a big drill. You don't have a big drill. You do everything you need for building your house, but suddenly you need a big drill. Yeah, you call for somebody with a big drill. Same with consulting. You're running a show. You're a manager. Yeah, suddenly you figure out something is missing. You call somebody in who can exactly do that thing for which you have first to decide you need that. Then you contract it. Then you give the person a mandate, ideally a person which is exactly suited to that job. And it will do the job much, much better than you ever could do. And then you pick up the results and you continue building your house. So, and I like the part of a manager being end-to-end responsible. On the other hand, I have to admit, I like kind of on the consulting side, I like clearly having the chance to actually step from let's just say, from job to job. and applying what I can do best, but in different scenarios and situations. But as I always tend to look on the whole thing and also try to actually see the big picture, I'm always tempted while working as a consultant to actually take an end-to-end role.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I'm always raising my hands if interim roles happening to come up through a consultant job.
Yeah.
I looked around. I think I've been in 6 or 7 of the situations in my 20 years of consulting career. Yeah. And it was always basically opportunity driven.
Interesting. I was just about to ask something about that, because I think, again, it's leading up to what we discussed before we came on the call as well, before we started recording. You know, if I say I call myself interim and fractional leader, and I call the podcast interim and fractional, which I, you know, if I say stole, borrowed from a big, you know, if I say company in the space called Scalewise, which, you know, started with a phrase of, you know, interim and fractional. And I really liked that. So I adopted it, really stole it, adopted it, depending how you look at it. Because I see, if I say my role most of the time is I either go in interim, to your point, I'm, you know, 3-4 days with the company and I'm taking an interim role. I'm the manager. I'm making the decisions, etc. Or I do more of project work, which I, you know, which to your point, I would call fractional, but you call consulting, right? Where you go in, you do some advisory work, right? And then there's another big group in, at least in the UK, called the Portfolio Collective, which I think is also spreading to Germany now in terms of memberships, which is looking at, if I say portfolio career people, so people that have more than one career. And that doesn't necessarily have to be, if I say, leadership interim or fractional. You know, this could be, if I say, freelance work as well. And I actually discussed that with someone else on the podcast early on in the year. Sometimes it's just a naming convention, right? But I think it's someone, I think, coined the phrase or used the phrase, it's kind of like the gig economy for the C-level. And I kind of like that, right? It's kind of like the top end of the gig economy. Do you see that developing further, or is it just names? Is it, you know, is it important to differentiate, you know, what it actually is?
I think we always had that. It might just have become more transparent. Maybe it's also taking up more. Let's say what we clearly all observe is we see workplaces and industries.
Yeah,
both rapidly changing. This was already true before COVID. It might have been underestimated, but I think the digitalization is the largest shift we currently see since, I would say, probably the steam engine. Yeah, we call it kind of macroeconomists call it Kondratiev cycles, big 100 years evolution cycles, and we are probably, if you call it an S-curve, we are in the middle of the slope of the S-curve. Yeah, yep. For digitalization. And this puts a lot of things into question. Full industry has been turned around. Look at the media industry, for example. We've both been in there. And I think one determining factor, if I look across 6-7 roles where I was in interim management positions, the client situation was always motivated by a significant part of uncertainty. Even if they would have been able to hire somebody, they weren't even clear what they needed.
Yeah.
They needed a manager. This was clear. I said they needed a manager, not a consultant. We talked about the difference.
Yeah.
But they weren't clear what kind of manager they needed.
Yeah.
And in that situation, there is indeed, it's a good idea to consider somebody interims. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, if the interim manager has a consulting background and has some ability to structure things.
Yeah.
Because what is it? You are in an opaque transitional situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
People are all over the place. Yeah. Mood is possibly bad. Yeah. Company is ailing.
Yeah.
You need somebody to actually walk you through a sequence of first providing structure. Secondly, within structure comes transparency. Transparency shows you the job to be done and the ability to break it down. And ultimately, that gives you responsibilities and ownership within the teams.
Yeah.
To go through this transition, Kind of heavy-handed structuring abilities are good. Yeah? Typically, such person, and probably such a person, is not the best long-term people handler. Yeah, it's okay. Not the person who's going to run the show for the next 8 years.
Yeah.
And that is typical. So, and that's why there is probably a good idea to consider an insurance management to get things set up.
Yeah.
And not think this person is the best person to run the show in the long run. And in particular, if you're not clear about which exact capability you need, because the whole situation is transitional, you're likely better off getting somebody who provides structure to an unknown situation, similar to a consultant, but taking the ownership of a manager, but then basically hands over to whoever does the job in future.
Would that be one and the same person or not? Do you think it's big? If I ask you if it's a different skill set, you would go like, no, because you can switch between those roles. Do you think a lot of people can, or is it a different skill set, you reckon?
I think you can switch between the roles, but even that ability is probably something you want to be special at. I can switch between those roles, yeah, but they all have in common that typically the situation is transitional, fast changing. What I thought is, for example, I'm not very good at is taking things the long way, kind of doing it 3, 5, 6, 8 years. And there are other people who do that. They are not as, let's just say, fast. Maybe they are not jumping as fast to conclusions. They're building slower, but they're building more sustainable. And you need both. You need both people. Yeah? And I think it's a good idea to think think about more like an archetype of people. And if you are basically looking, you've got an empty slot, you feel you don't want a consultant, as he means you don't want a coach.
Yeah.
You want a manager, which means you look on the board and you're not certain what the profile is. Take something interims, who's probably good in structuring, and think about it twice later.
Interesting, yeah. I like that approach. It kind of leads on to, say, a different question, or maybe it's part of the same question. From a company perspective, from an organizational perspective, what are the advantages of employing, I don't want to say a consultant versus an interim, but in general, do you think, I mean, I don't know what you see in Germany, might be good insight. Is it a growing space? Does it make sense for organizations to hire interim and fractional? Or is it better to wait longer and then, you know, hire someone full-time? And if I say partly, you answered that question, but maybe we can explore a bit more.
I think we may want to look on both sides. On the one who has a need and the one who provides a service. Both sides in a specific situation have an advantage for going interim. Of course, it is never the mainstream. You may have if you have a company of, let's just say, 1,000 people, and you may have basically 2 or 3 management levels. You may have like 50 people or something like that calling managers. Within that, you don't want to have more than a handful of interims, ideally. However, in situations where you have transitional change, maybe you build up a new business unit or you have to structure something, or in digitization, typically, you have basically to build a completely different way of working. For example, you're changing your whole sales approach into fully digital. You may actually consider an interim's role transitionally while you figure out how the actual future manager actually looks like. And whether you can actually have somebody build a pull up from the second line onto a top management level, or you have to go external, because you always know going internal is better, external is a risk. So the company buys itself time. And if it's right, also a very high quality. Now looking on the supply side, there are people out in the market who actually don't like to be employed for permanent times. They just don't like it. Yeah. Typically, these are more the risk takers. Which by nature makes them pretty good in transitional situations. Because risk takers are trained on actually sorting things out. Because they are working on fractional interims, they may have a certain margin upside. They cost more. More expensive. This is fair. Because they typically don't work permanent, so they have to be a deal. It's similar, like for like quality. So you have on one side somebody you'd like to have is a risk taker. He's going to build up something new, but it's pretty expensive. And on the other side, you have basically a spot, open. You don't know who to put on it. You need to get something sorted. That's the situation when the whole thing starts flying. On the other hand, if you have planned for the next 10 years, you can do succession planning. You can basically do all the things that proper, let's just say, managerial capacity building actually encompasses. Why would you pay the premium? Yeah. Well, you might not get a better manager. Yeah, it's going to cost you premium, and you might actually get a risk taker into the company where you just want to have somebody to run the whole thing on the long run.
You really think external are more risk takers? It doesn't have to be like that, right? It could just be a lifestyle choice to say, you know, I just enjoy just doing project work. I'm going in short term, making decisions, changing things, and then I move on.
Could be, but I would say people themselves are sufficiently independent to step on and off the job without thinking too much about the pension funds are typically more risk prone than the ones who don't.
Okay.
I would say so. At least empirical evidence would point that out. So it always sounds kind of, would you hire somebody who has a higher risk profile? Doesn't sound right? But it's a different thing. Mm. Somebody who is open to manage change is a different person than somebody who is maintaining a situation. Let's put it that way.
I mean, I deliberately ask because, quite frankly, I never saw myself as a risk taker, right? When I finished uni, I just wanted to have a job. And then I realized that most companies I worked for got acquired. I took redundancy and I ended up, you know, going into, you know, a paid full-time position for about a year. So to your point, you know, I set up a new pension scheme, you know, I set up, all the direct debits and everything like that. And if I had done that as a contractor or a consultant or interim, I could have charged more. I would have taken more money home. I would have had to sort out my own pension. And eventually, obviously, and I guess that's why I'm doing interim and fractional work, if I say, enjoy that now, very much going into companies, doing, you know, a year, maybe 2 years, however long the project takes, and then get off the project. But it's not because I have a higher appetite for risk, but I think it's just the way I enjoy working. So, you know, I'm not bound to any company politics. I'm not bound to any, you know, if I say rules within the company, right? So I don't have to go to the Christmas parties, these kind of things, right? I think legally I'm not even allowed to go to the Christmas parties.
In Germany, definitely not. There's some kind of rules, feelings that are pretty peculiar ones. Very careful to not go to Christmas parties.
There are a few things, right, where you have to be really, really careful because of, you know, tax reasons and legal reasons. So I'm not sure I agree with risk taking, right? But then the other question is, if we take the risk taking aside at the moment, what other advantage does a full time employee have really for a company? Are they more committed, or is it just a different contract you have with them? That, I mean, in Germany, if I say labor laws are different, right? I mean, in the UK, whether you have a permanent contract or you have a consultant contract, you know, if I say besides the tax differences, you know, unless you have been with the company for 2 or 3 years, there's not a lot of protection. So, you know, I know Germany is different, right? You have 6 months notice period and you know, all that jazz, which is, you know, which is great. I mean, look at France, right? It's similar. I think Italy is similar as well. We don't have that in the UK. And if you, just to expand on that point, if you look into the US, and I brought that up in the podcast earlier this year as well, when you're a contractor, no one pays for your health insurance, right? So a lot of contractors don't have health insurance, which of course is a huge advantage if you go into employment and the employer pays for health insurance.
Well, let's first separate one thing out, which I think is a difficult one. We want to get into the wrong direction. There is a certain amount of, let's just say, freelance work in Europe, which to a certain kind has an element of let's just say, social security fraud. Yeah. Which basically means if people are just offering their time to work cheaper because they don't pay health insurance, don't have retirement fund, stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is, at a certain extent, something which I'm really critical about. For myself, kind of in all my times of self-employmentship, I basically have a health insurer since about 35 years.
Yeah.
Continuously. The same with my own pension schemes and stuff like that. Nevertheless, so this shouldn't be the motivation. So if you feel you can't earn the money you like and the only way to get it is to actually go on freelance, this is probably the wrong place to be.
I agree with that.
On the other hand, what does make the advantage of a permanent employee for a company? There are philosophical thoughts about companies only consisting out of freelancers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you do startups, in particular startups in early phase bootstrap mode, yeah, just typically on just networks of people coming together exploring an idea, yeah, which is a quite interesting phase for a startup. I've done that several times, and if I actually build startups basically of for others, yeah, they were also you would like pull people from a current from existing companies and from the market. You pull people on purpose into a job and actually try to build a startup. And the early phases might just be let's just say a bunch of wild radicals working together. But in the long run, I would say there is a significant advantage for actually getting long-term thinking and sustainability in a company.
Yeah.
Exactly the same thing which makes a large company difficult to change is exactly what it makes successful.
Yeah.
And I would say kind of from my own personal experience, let's look on something like a postal operator. And I'm talking about my own experience, Deutsche Post. Yeah? Deutsche Post enjoys at the moment the benefits of being a postal operator since almost kind of hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But particularly in Germany, they have a workforce where people might have been in the job for 30, 40, up to 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that creates a lot of sustainability.
Yeah. Yeah.
But doesn't make change easy. And both things have its benefits. And the example of a postal operator might serve the purpose. And as you know, kind of if you get it right, you can combine the best of both worlds. And Deutsche Post had done this. I mean, you look at the Deutsche Post's developments through the pandemic. They fared terrific. Yeah, they did a great job. They had extremely motivated people basically bringing the parcels every day, regardless what happened outside there.
Yeah.
They were rewarded by a very decent rise of the stock price. Yeah, reasonably. And they actually went from 4.9 billion to 7.7 billion euros profit after they had years between 2 and 3 billion. Yeah. So kind of things went right. Yeah. And this is not only because they're all innovative and changing things, but because there are a lot of people who just basically doing a decent job every day in and out. On the other hand, is such an environment the best environment to found something from scratch? Definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what some people might call the innovation dilemma. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's probably even a more complex thing. It is indeed. It is just something you don't want to try. You don't want to use a large, stable, reliable company to then try to start things out. Yeah. It's not fun for anybody. So, and we should just acknowledge that different types of roles, operating models, getting people together. So if you want to found something new, do it properly, do it outside.
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
Okay. Yeah?
But there is a significant value in hundreds of thousands of people being basically in a job coming in day and day out and getting things done. Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually an interesting point, I take that point. Yeah.
There's an old story, a story coming from the behavioral science. It's been said kind of if a population is only consisting out of risk takers, it will not survive. Yeah. Pretty simple example. Yeah. If everybody had joined the first boat of Eric the Red sailing to America, probably all would have died and we wouldn't have a story about it.
Yeah.
The point, you don't want to have more than 10% of the population actually entering that boat and sailing to America and the remaining 90% taking care about the next generation. And both has a valid reason. Without the one part, you don't have progress. Without the other part, you don't have a future.
Yeah. I like that. I like that analogy. That's great. Yeah, and I take your point. So I think there were really good, interesting points here. Before we come into a close, because if I say I'm quite strict with my 30 minutes, right? If I say not too strict, but if I say I don't want to bore people either, right? So I'm hoping I don't. But what would be, if I say the best piece of advice you would give someone who wants to start out and if I say exploring the interim and fractional space, would you, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What would you suggest to be a consultant, to do interim work or, and how to find it? Is networking the best way of doing it?
I would clearly advise an approach via consulting. Particularly if you are, let's just say, kind of in the early part of a career, in your first 5 or 8 years of career, working as a consultant and then going into interims, probably good idea. Two reasons for that. As I say, first, you learned a couple of things from scratch. And second, kind of, I would say, doing interims in early parts of your career, you might want to take the risk, but the question is whether you already have the position to pay the price.
Yeah.
The later in your career to do it, I think the easier it is to bear the risk and the more likely you'll be successful because you're not pressured to take any job.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
Brilliant. Peter, thank you so much for being my guest. I really enjoyed that conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Did you enjoy today's experience? If you did, please leave me a 5-star rating on the outlet you're listening to and tell others about the show as well. Do you have ideas for guests? Any comments or questions? Please email me to podcast@valudapartners.com. And don't forget to check out www.valudapartners.com and subscribe to my monthly newsletter filled with insights on leadership and self-development articles. Until next time, this is your host, Volker Valuda.